Welcome to This is Type 1, real-life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. I'm Colleen Mitchell, and I've had type 1 diabetes for 23 years. By day, I'm a process analyst in the power industry, and by night, I'm an author, blogger, and virtual assistant. I'm passionate about type 1 diabetes education and showing others that this disease doesn't define me.
I'm Jesse Tuggy, and I've had type 1 for 7 years. I love hiking and painting, and I'm looking forward to working as an engineer after college. My diagnosis has inspired me to take control of my future and learn everything I can about it.
Each week on the show, we'll talk about real life with type 1 diabetes, bring on cool people with connections to type 1, and above all, encourage you to understand that this disease doesn't have to hold you back. This isn't medical advice. This is life with type 1. Welcome to episode 3 of This is Type 1. Today, we're giving an overview of what exactly diabetes is and what makes type 1 so serious.
But to start off this week, we're going to start with our win of the week. And for this week, I've got the win. I know I've been mentioning this quite a bit, is that I've been in California, but traveling is huge with diabetic risks, and it comes with a whole lot of surprises with diabetes. So this past week, we were getting home from California. I was driving across Oregon on the freeway, but right before I started driving, I ate some chips with my lunch. I had a lettuce wrap for lunch, but I had some chips with it. And since we were driving and sitting all day, my blood sugar went high. So luckily I had my sensor on and it told me that I need more insulin. So I grabbed my pump and was able to check my blood sugar and put in my BG before it got to the low 300s. Unfortunately, it did get to like 295, but you know, I still caught it before it got to 300. So my win of the week would have to be I caught my blood sugar safely and effectively before it became too much of a problem.
That's good. 295 is still pretty high, but...
Oh, yeah. You know. I wasn't feeling too great after.
I imagine not, no. So for the fail of the week, I have that. And it's not technically my fail, personally. I get to put all of the blame for this fail on my third-party supplies distributor. So for my last shipment of infusion sets and reservoirs, Edgepark sent me the Lurelock infusion sites instead of the T-Lock infusion sites.
Oh, so you got the wrong infusion site.
Yes. So I went from having 3 months of supplies to having 0 months of supplies in one site change. On Tuesday, I went to change my set, pulled out the new box, opened it up, opened the site, and almost immediately noticed that the connection from the site itself to the cartridge didn't fit. So they were like the same size. It was like, it wouldn't go in. I was freaking out. And then I realized, so this actually goes right into my hack of the week, which is 100% related to this fail. So I took my old tube from the last site that I had just taken out and used the tube to connect the cartridge to the new Lurelock infusion site after putting it in, because the only difference was the connection to the cartridge, not the anything to do with the infusion site itself. So I could still use the old tube. And that lasted another 3 days while I waited for Edgepark to get off their butts and send me the supplies they were supposed to send me. So that's my hack, is if you are going to be changing sites and you're changing boxes of sites, to keep the old tube just to make sure you have a backup in case something goes wrong.
That's very clever.
I was proud of myself for that one, to be honest.
You should be. That's impressive.
I was freaking out too.
Yeah, I bet. So most people have heard about diabetes, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't know exactly what it is. So honestly, it's kind of an abstract thing that doctors warn about. And because there are two types of diabetes, type 2 is more common and people end up with a lot of misconceptions about type 1 because of this.
Yeah, so we want to clear all of that up. Type 1 diabetes is actually an autoimmune disease, and that just means that the immune system attacks itself pretty much. The immune system attacks the insulin-producing cells that are in the pancreas called islet cells. And once a significant number of those islet cells are destroyed, you produce little to no insulin, and insulin is a hormone. So for non-diabetics, the pancreas will secrete insulin into the bloodstream. It circulates, which allows sugar to enter your cells. It's kind of like a key that unlocks the cells so that sugar can go in and be used by the body for energy. But insulin lowers the amount of sugar in your bloodstream. And as your blood sugar drops, so does the secretion of insulin from the pancreas. And it's a cycle that diabetics don't have because we don't produce the insulin.
a big part of this would be glucose. And glucose is a form of sugar and is a source of energy for the cells that make up muscle and other tissues. Glucose comes from two major sources, food and your liver.
Your liver stores glucose as glycogen.
Sugar is absorbed into your bloodstream, where it enters the cell with the help of insulin. When your glucose levels are too low, such as when you haven't eaten in a while or follow a low-carb diet while being a non-diabetic, the liver breaks down the stored glycogen into glucose to keep your glucose levels within a normal range. And with type 1 diabetes, there is no insulin to let glucose into the cell, so sugar builds up in your bloodstream. This actually can be life-threatening and cause lifelong complications.
And just a list of those complications, especially for high blood sugars, you can go into diabetic ketoacidosis, which basically means your blood is turning into acid and eats you from the inside out. Not very fun. You can also go into a coma. There's also long-term complications like diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma. I know whenever I go to my eye doctor, he checks for those things in particular, and he always asks what my A1C is, which is great. There's also nerve problems from having high blood sugars for too long, heart and blood vessel disease, which is really interesting that you can get heart and blood vessel disease from type 1 diabetes. You can get kidney damage, skin and mouth conditions, and then there's also pregnancy complications. And if you're high for too long, it can set your feeling of what's normal. So if you're always like 250, 180 is going to feel low, and lows can cause seizures.
Yeah, it can be very dangerous to have both highs and low blood sugars when you're diabetic.
Yeah, and a lot of diabetics have hypo unawareness, which means they can't feel their lows. This used to be me when I was a kid. And hypo unawareness is especially dangerous while driving, because if you don't feel yourself going low and you get to the point where you're really shaky or you're confused, you don't know really what you're doing because you're so low, you could cause a crash. And so it's always a really good idea to check your blood sugar before you get behind the wheel of a car.
Definitely. That's one of the things that my doctor always told me to do when I started to learn to drive, was that you have to test your blood sugar or you have to check your sensor to make sure you'll be okay to drive.
That's really good.
Yeah. And it's commonly seen as like, if you get pulled over and you caused a crash and you have low blood sugar, people often think you're drunk instead of, you know, actually being low.
That is so true.
Yeah, there's horror stories of diabetics accused of being drunk behind the wheel because they were low instead of where they should have been.
This is actually a really good segue into a side note, because I have a police officer friend. And when I announced that we're starting this podcast, he messaged me on Facebook and was like, so can you guys do an episode on what police officers need to know? Because I don't know anything. And I was like, I love you. We're going to do an episode on that.
Heck yeah, we can.
Yeah. So back to why diabetes is so serious. The most important thing to remember is that type 1 diabetes is unpreventable and it's incurable. So we didn't do anything to get it, and we can't do anything to get rid of it. The only treatment we have is insulin therapy, whether from multiple daily injections or an insulin pump.
Right. And we are both on the insulin pump.
Different kinds of pumps, but yes, we are on insulin pumps.
Yeah.
These things are amazing.
Oh, they're so great. For our listeners out there, if you want to try something new and you're on insulin shots right now, I highly recommend go to the pump. It'll give you so much energy and just like make your life easier as a diabetic and easier to manage.
And you can ask for trial periods with pumps to test it out to see if you like that kind. So if you wanted to try the T-Slim and decide you don't like it, you don't have to keep it.
Yeah. And that works really well.
Yep. So let's move on to the risk factors for type 1 diabetes. The biggest risk factor is probably family history. So anyone with a parent or a sibling with type 1 has a slightly increased risk of developing it. I'm actually the first in my family with it. Mine was probably triggered from a hepatitis vaccine as a child, but I don't know if it was genetic. It was probably, I was genetically predisposed and it triggered from an environmental factor with vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. And then for me, my family history, my great grandmother had type 2 diabetes, but only in like the last 5 to 10 years of her life, because she passed away at 92, but wasn't diagnosed with type 2 until she was in her later 80s. So I was the first one with type 1, but I did have a little bit of family history with my great-grandmother being type 2.
Okay. I would argue that type 2 and type 1 should be completely different diseases, despite the fact that they both affect insulin or have insulin as a common factor.
Because I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So I think that because type 2 is really a metabolic condition and type 1 is an autoimmune condition, they shouldn't even be called the same thing.
Yeah. No, and there's two completely different ways that people can start to view type 1 and type 2 if they're separated by, you know, being called different things. I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions about type 1 is because it stems from type 2.
Right. Yeah. Because so many more people are diagnosed with type 2.
Right.
So another risk factor is geography, actually. The incidence of type 1 diabetes tends to increase as you travel away from the equator. And I've noticed that a lot of diagnoses happen with the changing of the seasons, September in particular. A lot of diabetics have their diabetes in September, both of us included. Mine's September 19th, and Jesse, you're September 27th, right?
Correct. This upcoming September will be 8 years for me.
Yeah, and I'm coming up on 24.
Isn't that amazing?
It's mind-boggling, to be honest.
It's insane.
So even though type 1 diabetes can appear at any age, it used to actually be called juvenile diabetes, but it really can be diagnosed at any age. It appears mostly at two noticeable peaks, the first being in children between ages 4 and 7, and the second between children ages 10 and 14. But it's not uncommon to see people in their 20s, 30s, even later developing type 1 diabetes. It's not just the juvenile diabetes thing anymore.
Right. My dad's coworker actually was diagnosed at 40 with type 1. And my mother's cousin, my second cousin, was diagnosed also around, I believe, her 40s as well. So yeah.
So there's some more history for you there.
Yeah. I mean, well, she was diagnosed 5 years after I was.
Oh, so she's relatively new, only about 3 years on there.
I think so. Yeah. She's fairly new at it. She's still on the shots and I'm super proud of her. So
nice.
Yeah. So it is becoming like kind of more common to see adults getting diabetes a little bit more too.
It's terrifying.
I know. And then also from what I've heard, girls actually get it at a younger age than boys do.
Really?
Yeah. So I was diagnosed at age 8 and I had a friend, he was diagnosed in this 10 to 14 year old range. I forget when he was diagnosed, but he is still fairly new. I mean, he's a younger diabetic, but you know, he's had it for a couple of years now.
That's interesting. That would kind of explain why the group with the youngest boys at camp is generally pretty small, whereas the girl groups are like exploding with kids.
Right. I mean, we have so many younger girls with diabetes compared to the boy counterparts where it's not as much. Last year, I think there was 30 of our young girls at camp and then only about 10 to 15 of our younger boys at camp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the size difference is astonishing.
Yeah.
So we also wanted to talk about the common questions that people have about type 1 diabetes. Jesse, what are the ones that you get most often and what do you respond when people ask you these things?
All right. So my first question that people ask me right off the bat is, what is diabetes? And so the way I describe it is that my pancreas does not produce any insulin. And insulin is the thing that lowers the sugars in your blood. And without that, I have to have artificial medicine. So that is what diabetes is. And then how did I get it? No one really knows. I don't know if it's because of my genetics or, you know, if it was predisposed or anything like that. So I don't know. How old were you? I was 8. I was 2 weeks from turning 9, but I was able to celebrate my birthday at home with my family.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was really important too, to the doctors as well, to get me home and make sure I was like, you know, still having a good childhood. And I did. And everyone did amazing with making me feel comfortable at home with being newly diagnosed.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, do you wear your pump all of the time? Or do you take it off when you go to sleep?
They actually ask that?
Yes. You would be surprised. That's like the second or third question everyone asks me. It's like, do you sleep with your pump?
Well, yeah. Okay.
Yes, I sleep with my pump. It's just, I have to wear it or else I die.
Pretty much.
The only time I would take it off is in the shower.
Right. Do you ever actually say, if I take it off overnight, I'll die?
You know, when I was younger, I did, and I got some pretty like, oh my God, are you okay? Don't do that. And it freaked a lot of people out, so I stopped saying that.
I would argue that you should continue saying that because then they, you know, might learn something.
That's true. And then another question was, did your parents know you were diabetic? How would they know I was diabetic before I went to a doctor's? Like, parents don't know beforehand, like before your diagnosis. Your parents don't know you're diabetic before your diagnosis. You're diagnosed when you are, and you know, it happens. Your parents aren't going to like look into the future and say, oh, she's going to be diabetic on this day. Let's go take her to the doctors and just make sure she's okay. That doesn't happen.
That actually raises an interesting point because a lot of the genetic testing now can find out when a kid's going to have Down syndrome. So they might not understand that diabetes isn't like in the womb. It happens after you're born and it can't be predicted. So they might be wondering if it's something like that where you can do testing beforehand to find out.
Oh, that's true. I haven't thought about that before. Well, I know there are some genetic markers out there for predicting if a child's going to have diabetes.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're just going to know, you know.
Yeah. There's actually some research going on at Pacific Northwest National Lab about those predictors, those genetic markers. I went to one of their presentations before I left, and I thought it was pretty interesting.
Oh, I bet. That must have been amazing. I think there's one lady at camp. She's a pinky counselor, and her kid's diabetic as well. And the way they found out he was going to have diabetes was that they actually went and got his genes tested.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So I guess there are cases where, you know, you might know a little bit in advance, but my parents didn't know.
Yeah.
And then what were the symptoms of your diagnosis? So mine were that I looked like I had the flu, but I just got weaker and weaker instead of getting better. So they took me to the doctors and I was diagnosed. So basically flu-like symptoms.
And those are common.
Yeah, those are very common. And then what can I do to help? Well, checking in is always good, but please do not hover over me. I'm fine. I've had diabetes for almost 8 years. I know what I'm doing. You do not have to worry.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So checking in is great. If you want to ask if I'm okay, if I look like I might puke or something, ask if I should test my blood sugar, you know, but don't hover.
Yeah. So it looks like you also got some kind of rude questions from people. So what are those?
So some of the more rude questions that I got, even now as a teenager and a young adult, is, were you fat as a child?
Wow. That's harsh.
Yeah. It's you know, I've had some pretty good blows to my confidence and my pride in the past because of this question. No, it wasn't because I was fat. It was because, honestly, no one knows why I was diagnosed. So, no, it wasn't because I was fat. No one knows.
Yeah. I was a bigger child, and I think that's kind of funny because insulin made me fat.
Right. I also was a little bit, you know, bigger of a kid. And in some ways, I think the insulin did make me, you know, bigger, but it wasn't because I was a fat kid. It was, you know, it wasn't anybody's fault or anything either. And then the next question that is also very rude that I get sometimes is, did you eat too much sugar or did you eat too much McDonald's? Okay, I just want to debunk this right here. You cannot eat a certain food and get diabetes. That does not happen. I've gotten that question so many times. Honestly, we didn't eat out at McDonald's at all or barely at all. Maybe once a month when I had like a gymnastics thing going on. And so, no, it wasn't because I ate too much sugar or I ate an ice cream cone when I was 6 and developed diabetes when I was 8. That doesn't happen.
That's a, That's a really good example of a question people ask when they think that it's type 2.
Yeah, so that is a huge difference between type 1 and type 2.
So type 2 is more related to dietary stuff, and we're going to talk about that in an upcoming episode.
Yeah, so that will be talked about, but type 2 is more dietary. Type 1 is more so on the lines of genetics and predisposal than anything else.
Or random chance. We don't know. They don't know.
No one knows. Like, it's up in the air. No one's going to know. It's like asking, why are humans on the planet? You know, it's very comparable to that. So no one's going to know.
Yeah, pretty
much. And then the last and most offensive question that I get is, are you type 1 diabetic because you are fat?
Dang. Okay.
Yeah. And that gets asked by small kids a lot, too, which is...
Oh.
You know, I can understand that, but I've had some teenagers really ask me that.
Oh, really? Teenagers?
Oh, yeah.
Harsh.
Yeah. So
for little kids, it kind of makes more sense that little kids would do that because they don't have filters. They don't know. I mean, when I was a kid and my uncle was over visiting, we would be like, why are you fat? And he was offended because we're kids and we don't know what we're talking about.
No, I mean, it's understandable. I get it for kids to be like, oh, you have it because you're fat. I get that. For teenagers to ask that is just very rude. And honestly, it's not okay to ask that.
Yeah, it's never okay to ask something like that.
No.
So some of the questions that I've gotten kind of a lot are, so the first one is, do you take off your quote unquote wearables to shower? So this is really similar to yours. Like, do you take it off at all? People seem to be really baffled that the adhesive stays on for between 3 and 20 days, depending on what it is. They always ask, do you take it off to shower? I'm like, no, it stays on.
Yeah.
And another question a lot of diabetics get is, can you have sugar, like, at all? And the answer is yes, we can have sugar. I just personally choose not to because I've found that eating sugar has a really bad effect on not only my blood sugar, but how I feel in general. And going off of sugar has massively helped my weight.
Yeah, we can eat sugar. We just can't, you know, eat tons of it. It doesn't make us feel good.
I think one of the worst pieces of advice that young diabetics are getting is that they can eat whatever they want as long as they give insulin for it.
Oh, really? Why do you say that?
Because if you eat whatever you want and whatever you want happens to be an entire cheesecake at 3 in the morning, then you're going to have to give like 10 units or more. And that insulin is causing weight gain. But that's actually probably better addressed as a topic under hormones. And I have a good friend that we'll bring on to talk about hormones and exactly why that happens.
Yeah. So that will be explained in a later episode.
Yeah. Other questions that I've gotten are, most memorable one is, do you come with instructions? That's not really a common question, but it was definitely the most memorable one I've ever gotten. Another question I get is about my pump, and people ask if it's a pager. And I'm like, it's not the 90s anymore. It's not a pager. It's an insulin pump. It just looks kind of similar.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a horror story, actually, about this topic?
Sure. Yes.
So this past year, I was going into my French class and I was wearing my pump. And for the first day of school, she handed out madeleines, which are a French small pastry. And I actually forgot to grab a lunch. So I was hungry. So I decided to eat it. And so I got up. I had my pump in my hand. So I was clicking on it and stuff to put in carbs for the little pastry. And I get up and I throw it away. And I turn around and not 2 feet from me is my French teacher. And she asked me very directly, I'm sorry, is that a phone? And I was like, no, it's my insulin pump. She's like, wow, it looks a lot like a pager. Are you sure it's not a pager?
Wow.
So yeah, it was a very expressive conversation about what she thought about that.
That's why I'm really glad that I talked to all of my teachers when I was growing up to explain that this is diabetes, this is what I have, I use this to manage it and all of that stuff, so they don't ask things like that.
Right. And it was especially mortifying because it was in front of the entire class. And
oh, man.
Yeah. I had actually sent her and all of my other teachers an email saying, hey, look, I'm diabetic. If you have questions, please come to me privately. But in front of class, I'd rather keep the focus on learning rather than my diabetes.
Yeah. I've actually heard another horror story. It happened a long time ago and not to me. There was a story about a kid with, I think it was a Medtronic pump in class. And the teacher actually walked up to him when he was doing a dose and ripped the entire site out. Yeah, he ripped the pump out of the kid's hand, the site pulled out, and man, those parents were pissed.
Oh my God.
I get pissed just remembering that story because I would never, ever, ever be able to deal with something like that calm and collected. It was a horrifying story.
I'd probably start to cry. I'm not going to lie.
I'm probably sure I would too. And I wouldn't be surprised if this kid started crying because that's such a crap thing to do to a kid.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So moving on. other questions that I've gotten are, they ask, is that the bad kind of diabetes? That kind of implies that one of them is worse than the other. And from certain perspectives, it is. But diabetes is diabetes, even though they should be technically separate diseases for type 2s, when type 2 can be controlled, I guess, from diet and exercise and medication. But type 1 is incurable. So I guess that is the kind of bad kind of diabetes. But I don't know. Would you think that this is the bad kind of diabetes, or should there really be a distinction?
I think there should definitely be a separation between type 1 and type 2, just because one can be cured in a sense, meaning type 2, because it's manageable, or more so with dietary and exercise. So they should be separated. I have been told that type 2 is, you know, harder sometimes, but I think it more depends on the person and who you are to really know what is bad in your life and what is good in your life. For me, I think diabetes is a part of me. It's kind of shaped who I am as a person. It's made me responsible. And I wouldn't know what being type 2 is like because I don't have it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, so now it's time for our question of the week. We want to know, what are your questions as our audience? We want to do a listener's question episode where we can answer all and any of your questions about diabetes. Even if you think they're stupid questions or they're small questions, please ask. We really want to know how we can help you as being diabetics ourselves and having the resources to answer your questions. And you never know, your question might be the same as somebody else's. So it's always good to ask. There are no dumb questions.
And your questions might help other people, especially if they have that same question.
Exactly.
So that's it for this episode of This is Type 1. You can find the show notes at inspiredforward.com/episode3. That's the number 3. And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode, please leave us a comment or send an email. Our music is by Joseph McDade, and our audio wizard is my husband, Tim. I'm on all social media as @inspiredforward, and our email is colleen@inspiredforward.com.
And I'm on Instagram as @JJ_CrystalKAT. Please feel free to send me questions or comments you have about T1D or about the show. And for our listeners who don't know what T1D is, it's slang for type 1 diabetes.
It's very common slang, especially when typing it out.
Oh, it's so much easier to just say 3 letters.
Yeah, pretty much. So thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends. And please leave us a rating or review on iTunes, since that helps other people find us. Be sure to tune in to our next episode, where we talk about sibling perspectives with our first guest, my sister. Until then, keep it real.
Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face to face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.